And good evening, good evening, good evening, good evening, good evening, good evening. And I finally succumbed to temptation to use the good evening, good evening, good evening cliche on radio, which all radio announcers use. And I've finally used it, so I'm quite proud. There, actually. I'm Seth, and this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by the Australian music journalist, Toby Cresswell. Now, it's usually about this time of the show that I take the opportunity to tell you that Toby Cresswell, when he was talking about 1001 Songs, he said, this is a book about our 1001 songs. There's no number one. There's no canon. Some of the songs are better than others, and each has its own qualities. These are 1001 songs that will enrich your life and broaden your palette. They're not necessarily the 1001 greatest songs of all time, but they are the 1001 songs that have been hugely influential on the 20th century. Some of these books, some of these songs, not books, are truly awful. But each one will enlighten you and broaden your palette. That's what Toby Cresswell said of his own personal magnificent opus thing. It is here for your listening pleasure, right here on Waiheke Radio. And first things first, right here on Waiheke Radio, for your listening pleasure, we have I-94 by Radio Birdman from 1977. And guitarist and songwriter Dennis Tech was raised in Michigan but moved to Sydney, Australia, with a white Epiphone guitar that had once belonged to Fred Sonic Smith of the MC5. The sound of the MC5 permeated Radio Birdman. The group Tech formed in 1974. There were plenty of other styles in there too. The New York Dolls, the Stooges, Jan and Dean, the Velvet Underground, Alice Cooper, the Blue Oyster Cult, the Missing Links, and the Rolling Stones. But pretty soon, they had a sound and style all to their own. In 1977, Radio Birdman was shaking Sydney apart, just as The Clash was doing in London and the Ramones did in New York. I-94 was Tex homesick note. Said Tex three times there, just for effect. Yes, hope you noticed. Name-checking the interstate highway between Chicago and Detroit. It also contained the line, "I got Garland Jeffries on the car radio. You know I don't need you." I can't particularly remember how that line goes right at the moment, but you'll hear it in tune, perfectly well sung, in a moment when I play you the track. Speaking of playing you the track, I think I might play it for you now, actually.
You ain't running.
The homesick sounds of Radio Birdman there with I-94. You're listening to Waiheke Radio on 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell, as presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones. Right, got that out of the way. Why did I do that in that sort of voice? It really is quite... doesn't suit me. Doesn't suit me. Do you think it suits me? Alex, it's a rhetorical question. Of course it doesn't suit me. What have we got next? Just have to look in the book here. Take a long, very long time to look in the book here, isn't it? Ha-ha! I'm looking in the book. Just wasting your time here. Really. This is Traffic and Dear Mr. Fantasy from 1967. Traffic singer Steve Winwood had one of the most soulful voices in British pop, as demonstrated by his work in the Spencer Davis Group. He abended that outfit with the three novices, drummer Jim Capaldi, saxophonist Chris Wood, and guitar roadie Dave Mason, and set out on a whimsical path. I was playing with this band, Deep Feeling, in the Elbow Room in Birmingham. Or maybe it's Birmingham. I wonder if it's Birmingham or Birmingham. I mean, you know, whether it's Birmingham, Alabama, or Birmingham, England. I'm going to... yeah, I think I'll go... oh, I can't be bothered. I won't bother about the accent anyway. Rather than stay in the centre of the action, Traffic moved into the countryside to Shepcott Farm, the former gatekeeper's cottage at Aston Tilrold, Berkshire. Yes, it was Birmingham, England. Tucked away in a copse of coconut and pine trees. No, hazelnut and pine trees. This is Berkshire, after all. The slate-roofed, two-story, white stucco-fronted building had no electricity. We were living in the basement in London, so we couldn't play because people would complain. So we moved about an hour out of London to a cottage in Berkshire where we could play all the time. It was doomed to fail. Four blokes, not even out of their teens, shoved together, living in squalor. As a marketing angle, somebody decided that it was getting together in the country. And the time, I didn't know about that, I didn't really care either. Winwood had his own version of the future of British music. The original lineup of Junior Walker, the all-stars was sax, organ, drums, and with no bass, he said. That was the Traffic concept. We were determined to make a uniquely British form of rock and roll that incorporated and evoked traditional music. Traffic's first singles and EPs evidenced were very fresh and novel sounds. They were clearly influenced by British folk music, jazz, and pop music. His early hits were Coy and cute drug songs Paper Sutton and Hole in My Shoe. The track that put them on the map as serious contenders with the 10-minute jam Dear Mr. Fantasy, which did for pop jazz what Cream had done for blues. Dear Mr. Fantasy was drawing that Capaldi had done, and became the title for a tune that was made up by Winwood and Wood, culminating in a very extraordinary guitar part by Winwood. Of course, those jams had nothing to do with folk or classical. We didn't really know what was going to happen, said Winwood, even though we thought we did. That is Traffic, ladies and gentlemen, with Dear Mr. Fantasy.
Thank you.
Mr. Crespo was right. That is quite an impressive guitar line there from Traffic. And dear Mr. Fantasy, you're listening to Waiheke Radio on 88.3 and 107.4. This is 1001 Songs, 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as presented by Australian music journalist Toby Creswell and selected by yours truly, me, Seth Titley-Jones. I think I got that a bit wrong, but basically that's the gist of the show. Next up, we have... just turn the page. It takes so long to turn pages in this world. Madness with One Step Beyond. Hey, you, don't watch that! Watch this! Exclaimed Charles Smash as he introduced the heavy, heavy monster sound! The seven-piece ska band were an ideal antidote for the often self-righteousness of punk rock in Britain. When the pop world was locked into a battle for the soul of the nation, then along came Madness. They had pork pie hats and mod suits, and they kicked up a real storm. Like an Ealing comedy with a Jamaican soundtrack. Madness was unafraid to look stupid in their vaudeville poses and crazy dances. This was entertainment. The Nutty Boys were a breath of fresh air, and they had more than a dozen chart-topping hits in 4 years. Madness evolved from a ska party band into writing their own material, which turned out to be celebrations of suburban England, in the manner of Ray Davies, but with lower brow. Ray Davies, who, of course, we did hear about here. Now, if you remember a few weeks ago with Lola by the Kinks, you know, la 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 Lola, you know, doing something with that song, actually. But and suffice it to say, right here and now, the Specials, no, not the Specials, Madness, the other one, getting mixed up with the ska bands there. Basically, One Step Beyond was a ska classic as recorded by Prince Buster. Madness played the track like it was a party, pounding out that sax and pumping up that tempo. Here was where the blueprint for the nutty, nutty sound of Madness started. Right, that's right, we're back on track. This is Madness with One Step Beyond, right here on Waiheke Radio.
Hey, you! Don't watch that! Watch this! This is the heavy, heavy monster sound! The nuttiest sound around! So if you've come in off the street and you're beginning to feel the heat, well, listen, Buster, you better start to move your feet to the rockin'est, rock-steady beat of Madness! We'll be right back.
madness and one step beyond. You're listening to Waiheke Radio. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell, the Australian music journalist, and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones. Now, moving ahead 21 years from the sounds of One Step Beyond and Madness, with the very big whooshing sound that sort of goes like this. Now we're in 2000 right here with U2 and Kite. This is the most magnificent of Bono's lyrics, and it was the most intimate. Kite was written around the time that the singer's father died. There was a complex relationship that was only being resolved in the last few years. The kite in the song belonged to Bono's children. "This is a reference," he said, "to the absurd moment of parenting when I took the kite up to Killiney Hill with Jordan and Eve, and I'd been away and I wanted to do the dad thing, and the kite blew off the line and smashed to smithereens on first flight. And Evie just asked if they could go home and play their Tamagotchis, and then I realized. I went back in my head, and I remember being in Rush or Scarries. One incident, when exactly the same thing happened. We used to have a caravan. I sort of felt the good boy aspect of the song was not for me, from me to him, but to him from me. That was the thing about songwriting. You're the last to know what you're on about. The song is letting go of fathers, of children, and perhaps of yourself. It is a song about identifying with the wind and recognizing the role of fate. U2 bring all their talents to bear on the backing. Huge swooping guitar breaks from the edge, counterpoint to the soaring string section. When things got too heavy, Bono brings the song back into the real world. When hip-hop drove to big cars and new media was the big idea. He's dating the song, but also mocking our temporal vanities. And let's see how he does that with Kite by U2. Just asking, throw some rhetorical questions and things into the mix. There.
It's about to get in. I can feel it coming. I think I know what it is. I'm not afraid to die. I'm not afraid to live. And when I'm flat on my back, I hope to feel like I did. stars when hip hop drove the big cars. In the time when new media was the big idea. That was the big idea.
You Two and Kite. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, and this is 1001 Songs, and I'm Seth. And this next track is Robert Palmer and Addicted to Love. That's fairly concise for you. Do you like it concise? I don't know. Robert Palmer and Addicted to Love from 1985. After years of exploring funk, calypso, reggae, soul and electronica, Robert suddenly became a star. The Power Station, a supergroup, helmed by Sheiks, Bernard Edwards and featuring Palmer, as well as Tony Thompson and Duran Duran's Andy Taylor, was suddenly a pop phenomenon. The slightly disco feel of Hard Rock Crunch, pumped by Edwards' production, was crass but diverting pop. Palmer brought it home with Addicted to Love. The song is funky and bluesy, but very modern in its production. The massive gated drums and thunderous, if simple, hookline. "It was not like I was looking for hits," said Palmer. "I don't know why one takes off and the other one doesn't. Maybe it's the weather. Even though you get famous for one peak or kind of thing, it doesn't delineate everything you've done." Addicted to Love was accompanied by an incredible video clip. There was Palmer, always comfortable in a soup, fronting an all-girl band in little black dresses and classic cocktail styling. The clip may be a self-parody, but its images were so arresting that it has become one of the most famous video clips ever made. I think the package was rolled into one that had to do with the timing, the sounds, and everything fell into place. It struck a fashion note in all directions, and I don't think any one aspect was more important than the other, Palmer recalled. The director said, "Your stand there and mime. I know it became an icon, but it's nothing to do with me. I don't regret it, and it's been extremely fun and humorous and tongue-in-cheek with elegant humor about it. And as the French say, what's the use of audacity without grace?" Robert Palmer, ladies and gentlemen, Addicted to Love. Oh, dear Lord.
Time, another kiss, and we'll be
Robert Palmer and Addicted to Love. You're with Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4. And I'm Seth.
Funnily enough.
And you're actually listening here to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. These songs were all selected by Toby Cresswell because I was far, far, far too lazy to select my own ones for your listening pleasure. Following song that Mr. Cresswell here has selected is I Don't Believe in the Sun by the Magnetic Fields. Stephen Merritt, the singer, songwriter, and philosopher behind the Magnetic Fields, is on a quest to discover a new pop aesthetic. It was part camp. The lineup consisted of one gay man, one gay woman, and one straight woman, and part bubblegum, part rock, some pop. Stephen Merritt had a fantasy of himself as the Brill Building hack toiling away at his desk while his friends presented the songs to an eager, or at least interested, public. After a couple of albums, it became apparent that Merritt would have to get out front. For the Magnetic Fields breakthrough album, 69 Love Songs, Merritt pulled out all the stops and wrote 69 Love Songs. By and large, as on I Don't Believe in the Sun, they were ironic but engaging and almost sort of powerful romances. While writing 69 Love Songs, I had 3 songs a day quota, which I always filled successfully. Most of the songs came out well, a few of them didn't, and I had to throw them away. But I generally edit them in a little bit later, and if the music isn't quite up to snuff, I might keep the lyric and change the music, or the other way around. My main activity is sitting alone and writing songs, so it's easy for me to be prolific. I don't like quiet when I'm writing songs. I like to be in a bar or a cafe. There has to be music on, a jukebox playing. Merritt is a refreshing change to the usual 21st century New York songwriter. Rock should have consisted of only the Paul McCartney brunch, he told Simon Reynolds, not the Lennon, Jagger, Richards one. I like Paul McCartney, you know. I did a little Facebook quiz the other day, and it told me that what was it called? Which Beatle are you? And it told me that I was Paul McCartney. Well, I'm not left-handed, but other than that, I could be, you know. Anyway, this isn't Paul McCartney though. This is the Magnetic Fields, and I Don't Believe in the Sun.
There's a sun in the sky, but me, I can't imagine why. There might have been one before you were gone, but now all I see is the night. So I'll
I don't believe in the sun. Well, actually, I do. I saw it just today, actually. But the magnetic fields don't, and they sang the song in 1999. So you can take their word for it. Just trying to do a pun there. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell, the Australian music journalist, and presented by Seth. Now, it's usually about this time that I do the weather, but all the machines are going to tell me right now is that the traffic's all right on the Harbour Bridge. If any of you are planning to travel along the Harbour Bridge at about now-ish, the traffic is all right, but other than that, I don't think I can help you. I can, however, give you the next track. The next track is Don Henley and the Boys of Summer. As the singing drummer of the Eagles, Don Henley saw the liberal possibilities of the 70s dissolve into a consumerist apathy. The Boys of Summer form Henley's solo album, is a companion piece to Hotel California. However, where the latter characters sink into decadence and lethargy, in Summer, the symbols and icons have ideas of progressive generation and are transformed into cheap baubles and knickknacks. The art that helped to change the world was now little more than a bumper sticker. Henley got all that information into a pop song under 4 minutes. "I was driving south on down the San Diego freeway," he told NME of the genesis of the song. "I got passed by a $21,000 Cadillac Seville and the status symbol of the right-wing, upper-middle-class American bourgeoisie." And the guy was wearing blue blazers with crests and grey pants. All the guys were wearing blue blazers and with crests and grey pants. It's so posh I can't even pronounce it properly. It's like my granddad or something. And then the Grateful Dead deadhead on the bumper sticker. Then there was a Grateful Dead deadhead bumper sticker on it. Oh, I see, he's doing some irony there. Wasn't the bit about the granddad and things wasn't really real. It's just that I lost my place. Henley didn't look back when recording the track. Rather than replicate the country rock style of the Eagles, Henley embraced the synthesizers and drum machines to get a modern sound for the record. Boys of Summer was one of those great, rare moments where I got so inspired by the track that Mike Campbell had given me that I just sort of wrote itself, he told Bud Scoffer. I just came screaming out of me. I was jumping up and down in the car because I knew I had something there. The song was a massive hit, although it perhaps didn't do so much to stop the commodification of revolution. Henley's despair just became more name-checking of consumer bands. I wonder what happened to my generation, Henley mused. All those great liberal ideas we had, now everything swung back to the right. The TV preachers with their own networks. It's pretty scary. What, Charles Stanley and all that sort of thing? Oh, names there. Not supposed to name names on radio. I'm going to name some names on radio now. This is Don Henley and the Boys of Summer. Actually, well, I'm not technically naming any names because I don't know who the Boys of Summer are. But this is the song. Don Henley there, and The Boys of Summer. Just get my radio jargon right. Now, the next track here on Waiheke Radio is John the Revelator by Blind Willie Johnson from 1927. Blind Willie Johnson had a hard life. Born in Texas in 1902, he was, according to legend, blinded at age 7 when his mother threw lye in his face in a jealous rage at her husband. Less than 40 years later, Johnson died when his house burnt down. As a child, he sang in churches and on the streets with a tin cup around his neck. It was there he developed his distinctive vocal style, swinging from bass to a tenor for a dynamic range that would work in the streets of Texas. His guitar style was similarly idiosyncratic, using a pocket knife and a slide as a slide on the guitar made from a cigar box. Despite these handicaps, or perhaps because of them, Johnson is regarded as one of the most influential guitar players by modern musicians such as Eric Clapton, Ry Cooder, Bob Dylan, and Jack White. At age 5, Johnson announced he intended to be a preacher. All his songs are religious rather than profane blues. His songs include Nobody's Fault But Mine, covered by Led Zeppelin, Motherless Children, covered by Eric Clapton, In My Time of Dying, covered by Bob Dylan, Jesus Made Up My Dying Bed, and it doesn't say who covered that one, and If I Had My Way, I'd Tear the Building Down. That was probably also covered by someone, but it doesn't actually say it here. Ry Cooder based his soundtrack of the film Paris, Texas on Johnson's dark... Dark was the night, cold was the ground, which he described as the most soulful, transcendent piece of all American music. Very patriotic there. Johnson is best known for John the Revelator, which Harry Smith incorporated in his Anthology of American Folk Music, 1952. Johnson's guitar is spare but driving and very powerful as he growls praise to the author of the Book of Revelations. John the Revelator is a song for which Johnson will be forever known. It was covered broadly by the Blues Brothers and sublimely by Gillian Welch. Carl Sagan put the song on a disc aboard the Voyager 1 spacecraft for the listening pleasure of alien life forms. It is likely that they will be downloading John the Revelator onto their interstellar iPods. Now, I'm not sure if you have one of these interstellar iPods, but for your listening pleasure, I am really big on the stupid jokes tonight, aren't I? But for your listening pleasure right here on Waiheke Radio, we have... We have John the Revelator by Blind Willie Johnson, like I was just telling you about before.
Well, who's that riding? Cried a holy, bound and bold, son of our God, daughter of Zion, Judith the Lion, he redeemed the saint that bought us with his blood. Tell me, who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Hey, for God the Seven. Well, what's John a riding? John a riding,
not the Revelator.
What's John a riding,
not the Revelator?
Hey, book of the seven seals. On the Revelator, great advocator, catch them on the bottom of Zion. Oh, telling the story, rising in glory, Christ. Don't do the love of the Maya. Tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Hey, for God the seven. Well, what's John the riding?
Not the Revelator.
What's John the riding?
Not the Revelator.
What's John the riding?
Not the Revelator.
Hey, for God the seven. Well, Moses, Moses, watching the flock.
saw the bush, well, he had to stop. God told Moses, pull off your shoes, out of the flock, oh, well, you I choose. And tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Hey, book of the
summer.
Well, what's done riding?
About the Revelator.
What's done riding?
About the Revelator.
What's done riding? Hell's cried a holy, bound and fold, son of our God, daughter of Zion, Judah the lion, he redeemed us and he bought us with his blood. Tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven seals.
That was John the Revelator by Blind Willie Johnson from 1927, which I hope explains any of the noises you heard in the background. It was just some recording, you know, vinyl, not vinyl, pre-vinyl days type scratchy sounds, which I did my best personally to clean up. When I edited these tracks, and I'm sure that plenty of other people have tried before me. But despite all that noise, I'm getting very big on sound effects tonight, aren't I? Yes. Despite all those noises, it is a really great track, and possibly one of the most influential songs of the 20th century, which is funny that, because this is 1001 Songs. These are the most influential songs of the 20th century, or at least they are, according to Toby Cresswell, who might be have a slightly biased opinion because he is an Australian, of course. But having said that, we're going to respect that opinion here at Waiheke Radio, and I'm personally going to respect that as me, Seth Titley-Jones. And I'm going to be leaving you now for another week. I will be back next Monday at 8 o'clock, and also you can hear the show repeated again, or you might be actually listening to it right now at 2 o'clock on Sunday, in which case it will be near enough to 3 o'clock, whereas as it is now, it is near enough to 9 o'clock. If you're not confused now, I don't know what will confuse you, because I'm certainly confused, but however, having said that, this being New Zealand Music Month and all, I'm going to leave you with the Kids of 88 in just a little bit.
I wanna confess, looking so good when your hair is a mess. I'm tearing the